सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्तिः 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 असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ तत्सवितुर्वरं रूपं ज्योतिः पारस्य धीमहि यन्नः सत्येन दीपये
So this section is about partial yoga, the yoga of the parts. The beginning of all yoga is the experience of union, oneness, identity. With what? With the real existence behind appearances. Pure being, not the becoming which carries you from moment to moment, confusion to confusion, but what is unmoving behind. This is the first state of yoga, to come into oneness, to know it. We say knowledge, but knowledge is a poor word. Knowledge is a study of being. It is an activity of consciousness. We mean knowledge with a capital K, what is connoted in the Greek term gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. It is a deeper, a profounder knowledge. The yoga of knowledge carries you away from the mind. The mind might be the beginning, might seem to be the parent of the effort, but it is not. It is the conscious element in the mind that is seeking for its own pure source. And that pure source is real being. We find always that it is. If it is not, what are you seeking? If it is not, how did you get here to ask the question? There is a being awaiting your discovery. It is the truth of all things. It is the truth behind the universe. It is your truth too. The Tat Sat of the Vedanta, that existence, is the same thing as when we say, Soham, He, I am. I am He. To discover that truth is to discover the truth of your own nature too. You cannot exist outside that. To be able then to find what is the truth of your nature and the truth of that supreme existence in the truth of everything else around, so that your experience of oneness is abundant. Is your job as a seeker. You can't rest satisfied with your own salvation. If you get to that knowledge of the self, say, well, I'm done. The rest of you take care of yourselves. Because it is that same self reflected in all others that seems to be in bondage, that seems to be suffering. And you can't ignore it. You have to find this oneness everywhere, in every soul that you meet, in the person that is your bitterest enemy, in that thing for which you have only repulsion, in that God that you worship, in yourself. It is always that one that you find. Essentially there. And the beauty of the yoga of knowledge, jnana yoga, is that it cuts like a knife through appearances to reach the dead center of that truth. But the truth that knowledge finds or discloses is not a greater truth than the truth of love. Sri Aurobindo, in writing in these notes, and here, so that my memory won't be imperfect, I'm going to refer to something. Note something that I thought was really delightful, that there are three other words that sum up the first state of the yoga of devotion: faith, worship, obedience. This is the beginning. You have to have faith to start. Shraddha. You have to have faith that there is that there which you can find, that the one you adore will receive you. You have to have the faith that you can make the journey, like others have before you, that it's real, that it's worth it, that this life that you're leaving behind, in a sense, that is your fixity in it, is worth this journey, this risk, this adventure, because you don't know if you'll get there, but you'll bet everything on it that you will. So that faith has to be the thing that starts us. Worship, because for us at this point, that is a distant reality. That is a distant being, something other than us, something outside of us. And our first natural approach to it is to put our hands together and salute it and acknowledge it. But it is you down here and that up there. And the third word in this triplex is obedience. So here is the law of love. First you begin with aspiration, and then you move to self-consecration, and you go through all the various steps that lift your being up. Aspiration, again, a companion of faith. If you don't aspire, how can the divine pull you out? If you're not willing to rise like a flower out of the earth, how will the divine help you? But if you just lift your head and begin, every movement that you make, the divine seconds and pulls you still more upwards. And then the self-consecration is necessary. That means to make yourself sacred. to not be immured in negativity, egocentrism, but to be willing to be big in spirit, to be able to step onto that altar, yourself the sacrificial beast, ready to give yourself, to say, I will. But that's just the first one. There's another three words: adoration, delight, self-giving. So if in this first phase, we are in the approach to the divine, starting from the exterior, moving to the interior, from the near to the far. Here, adoration is an ebullience that rises in the heart as you begin to live an inner life. The first thing that you feel is, as you approach that, a sense of, oh my God, literally, look at how wonderful. It is magnificent, it is sweet, it is pulling me into it. And that adoration is a natural thing, because now you're in its ambience. Delight. The harmonies of the heart begin to express themselves. And one wants to give oneself. One wants to offer. It is no more a beast on the sacrificial altar. It is now, take me. This part I just discovered in myself. Will you have it? Here's a nice thought that I had today. May I give it to you? What service may I perform to you who live in all other beings? There is this kind of joy in the approach, which means nothing is held back. One simply wants to sit on the lap of the beloved. And then, even more, love, ecstasy, self-surrender. Because that approach culminates in love, in the rapt union between the soul and the divine, like a small soul and a large soul moving together, embracing. And it is deep, it is unfathomable, it goes beyond friendship, it goes beyond being a child, it goes beyond being a lover. There's no way to express what utter oneness is. But love, at that height, is its pure expression. Ecstasy. Sri Aurobindo uses this term here because there's nothing that really takes us beyond delight except the sense that we're thrown up, we're thrown out into a fierce ananda. And surrender is the law of our works then. Surrender is the law of our being. It is not any more self-giving. There's no sense of self. Now it's just, oh, take me. And the divine assumes you into its own being. The communion is deep. Notice that Sri Aurobindo, when writing about the yoga of love and devotion, does not exclude the beatitude of moving into the absolute. Normally, the yoga of devotion says, this God with this name I worship and love. Sri Aurobindo says, break that down too. Personality, impersonality, this experience beatifies the whole of our nature, and we rise and rise until we meet and commune with that which has no name or which takes all names, whatever is just for the being who approaches That is the form it assumes. If you're large enough in spirit to need no form, then it says, welcome, just as much. So, the yoga of the heart. But there's also the yoga of works, because it's true being that we seek. And it's the truth of our experience, the sap of the experience of being that we seek. But it's also the empowerment of true being that we seek, to move and live in the world in an enlightened way, to move in an increasingly enlightened way. To do that, we have to give up our personal sense of doership, that this is my job and my work and nobody else can have it. And when I've done it, then I get the reward for it. And that's why I do it. If all is contingent on our personal will, then our success in yoga can only be done by ourselves. But we find in the yoga of works that if we set our egocentrism aside and simply do the work without claiming the fruit and offer it, that there comes a sense to us of a greater will expressing itself in the world, of which our little will is a thread. So learning to be in tune with that greater will, we give up the ownership of that little thread and let that energy work through us. And as it works through us, it lifts us into greater recognition of what it is, so we begin to get knowledge. It purifies our heart so that we're not doing it for ourselves anymore. We're doing it for the divine who is above, but also everywhere. And we're grappling with our nature. Now, normally we may think of our nature as being a bondage. At least it's a commonplace in yogic practice to think that, oh, this body is a mess and how can I ever make any progress as long as I'm chained to it? Let me become an anchorite and move away from it, and then I'll find the true spirit. One can do that. But it is a greater task, a greater yoga, to live in that same spiritual consciousness while dealing with the body, while dealing with the emotions, while dealing with the mind, and moving again from the near to the far, finding out the inner dimensions of ourself, living centrally from our soul, living in the awareness of the universal self, all become possible as we work and offer that work. We like to think that sacred work is of a certain kind, like we think that knowledge, when it's divine, is of a certain kind. But any work can be significant, can signify that state of communion with the Supreme. It isn't that writing books or giving lectures or presiding over the Senate, running a company, is better work than anything else. Writing a poem is better than cooking a nice dish. Whoever works in communion with the divine goes to the divine. However humble that work might seem, that's the work that matters. If you have terrific gifts that have somehow come to you, and you can't use them except with reference to yourself, then you're a slave of those gifts, and you have not transcended. And you cannot be a perfect channel for the expression of this higher power, which is conscious being, delighted in itself. You can't be a channel as long as you're bottled up in your ego. You have to surrender. So surrender, which we heard in the yoga of love, is just as important in the yoga of work. When we act, it should be the expression of a self-giving, which is becoming a self-surrender. When we throw down the bars that prevent us from connecting with that, when we break through our own prison, because we're the ones that imprisoned ourselves, we can live in that consciousness. But we find that living in the world, even when we're awake to the soul or awake to the spirit, does not confer upon our work perfect knowledge. You may be aware of what that is in essence, but still one stumbles. The Gita says, thick and tangled is the way of works, and even the sages are deluded when they enter the field of action. And so Sri Aurobindo writes powerfully that if we're going to change that, if we're going to be able to marry spirit to the world in a way that will change or transform it, we can't do it through the enlightened mind or the uplifted heart or the plasticized, energized body. All of these things will always be subject to the inconscient ground from which they come. We have to climb high, high, high above the mind into what he called the supermind, that range of consciousness, which takes the infinity of that pure being and harmonizes it and casts it out into beautiful, powerful expression. It's only when we evolve our consciousness to that point that the soul will have the power to undertake the transformative work here. That's when we can divinize the earth. That's when we'll change things absolutely. So it's a long way to get there. The best thing is don't think about the time. The best thing is to find your soul inside, to live from your soul, not from your ego. Live with your being yoked to the divine will and not led by your personal will, which will make a mistake every time it steps. And to have the capacity to retire into the felicity of these inner states without abandoning the work outside, however difficult, however confounding it might be. Don't give up. The first step, go inside. Meditate. Contemplate. Simply feel a communion. If meditation is difficult, don't meditate. Instead, feel upwards. Catch the sense of that presence and just move yourself into communion with it. Feel it. Become one with it. The more you do, like a magnet, you will draw it to you, and it wants to come to you. Peace will descend. Light will descend. Ananda, finally, will descend. And inside, there's always that world of happiness. But don't abandon this vexed world outside. It needs your help. Out here, too, are our brothers and our sisters. Out here, too, things need to be saved. Not saved and thrown in the experience of moksha into a supracosmic absolute, but made aware here. Wouldn't it be a wonderful experience to live in a body that is aware of its hosting a divine life force, a luminous mind, quiet and stable, a supramental, all-harmonizing consciousness? All of it, is the goal of yoga, to replicate in ourselves what the divine being is in its largeness. Transcendent, universal, individual, but all of it compressed into the signature which you are. You are the divine signature on earth. So here he's speaking of partiality. Next week we take up the integrality of yoga, the experience of fullness, purna, which we chant about every Sunday. And then the week after that, we take up essays on the Gita. Let me also say that that is going to be, if I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken. Next week is the 31st, right? So we finish that then. And then on the 7th, I guess we'll start essays on the Gita. Or would you prefer to start it on the 14th, which is when we celebrate Sri Aurobindo's birthday, because it will already be the 15th in India. And we'll just have a sort of, I don't know, an improvised session next week, or that week. No strong feelings about it? Okay, I'll make the decision, I'll get back to you. All right. So, questions or comments? Don't look at me, I don't have any mints. Welcome to Angela. She's just had a birthday, she's still in the glow. See how radiant she is? All right then, I guess it's time for contemplation. We'll go and meditate. Mm-hmm.